When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's Bashomania!
Let me tell you something, brother. He gave us everything he had in him tonight. What you gonna do when Bashomania runs wild on? Oh, it's gonna be a good one.
And business just picked up here on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
There he is. The brain is awake. Willie in Washington. Good morning.
I'm almost in Washington, a little bit east. But, hey, yeah, it was a long one, boy. I slept in today. I ain't going to lie.
How far away from – I thought you were in Spokane. Or you just fly out of Spokane.
I fly out of Spokane. It's like Spokane's like a half hour.
Oh, you're in the French town right next to it.
I know, baby.
Yeah, it is only 1 o'clock there. It's 4 o'clock here. We were just talking about it off air because I left yesterday. I went home in between sessions and my wife and kids were with me. And, you know, we've got a lot of friends in State College. So I wanted to bring them. I was able to bring Freddie into Rec Hall. We were over at the family clothesline actually. And Bo Bartlett had texted me like, hey, a bunch of us are heading over to Rec Hall. 4 o'clock. Meet us over there. So I went over there, brought Freddie. That was pretty fun. But yesterday, man, I don't got to tell you because you've been at more events arguably than anybody I know. But these days are so long. And
yeah. You know, I was – obviously, I stayed home because I thought better of it. It was just – because I got Vegas next week. Vegas is very important to me. And anyway, it would have been a tough turnaround. And – I was kicking myself the whole time, and then I'm getting calls from people that are there, and like, bro, you would love being in the room today because there was like 80 of everybody who's who of wrestling. Mm-hmm. I was like, I know, man. You know, it's like I wish I was there. Can I get on a flight to get in time? You know, I was just thinking the last minute, but. Then how the format played out, and I'm getting texts from people there like, bro, this is brutal. Mm-hmm. And the format was pretty brutal, really long. I can't imagine how it was in the arena. And then those breaks, you know, I would take a nap. I would take a nap for 3 hours, wake up, and then session would start an hour later. But, yeah.
Well, and that's kind of what happened where Saturday morning, you know, I was obviously there first and foremost for my guys. If I work with you, like, I want to be there supporting you. If this was Burrow's last weekend, like, I wasn't going to miss that for the world. So, you know, I went down, and Saturday morning, my wife's kind of joking about leaving and watching the finals at home. And I'm like, well, Gilman's out. He's one of my guys. If Zane beats Nick Lee again, I'm like, okay. Now, both of those guys, we're down to four matches. I'm like, so to hang out for 4 hours, and last night there was only four men's freestyle matches, six women's, and then eight Greco matches. And yeah. So
I mean,
I'm like,
about that. When you put it on prime time, you put it in a prime slot on cable, and then to only have, I mean, this is not a knock on women or Greco, but to only have four men's freestyle, it seems like a missed opportunity.
In 5 hours of wrestling, because it went from 6:30 to like 10:30, 11.
Yeah. So, on one hand, like, they could have certainly organized it better, the format. Like, definitely should have put at least 157 final and 165 final in the night session, at least.
I don't know how much of that was NBC or USA Wrestling because, you know, if it would have went a third round, it was going to be in the night session anyways. So if you weren't totally going to not have those matches in the evening, I would have understood it a bit more. But I was honestly almost rooting for the obviously when Spencer won, I wanted Gilman and Zane Nick. I'm happy for the winner, but like I was hoping they went three just so we could see it in the night session to feel like it'd be a greater product.
Right. Yeah, for sure. You know, now I'm being critical. I think everybody's being critical on social media. And I'm sure they'll make adjustments going forward. But it's not an easy thing to figure out. If you're trying to be equitable between Greco, women, and men and fit into some sort of time slot, it's not the easiest thing to figure out.
And I do think that I think criticism is good from a standpoint of if you don't know what people are saying, it's harder to plan in the future. Yeah. And I do think Flo has a much better setup going with Final X, where they have finals at 2 and 6. They have the finals a couple weeks out. I do think that's better than the process this weekend.
100%. I think the Final X process is the best. I've said that for a long time. However, then the criticism, there's criticism from both sides on, well, okay, that gives the winner of the challenge tournament time to rest. The pro of Final X, it gives a challenge tournament guy to, you know, time to rest and recover and focus for one guy. But then you get the criticism from the flip side is like, that's not how a wrestling tournament is staged. That doesn't replicate the world championships.
Yeah. And Brooks said it in one of those comments in the press conference or the post-match interview that, you know, he had that ability to blow out his lungs the day before. And he knew after he beat David that first match, David had the opportunity to blow his lungs out and he was going to come harder for that second match. Like, so there's definitely a lot of interesting takeaways from the format. You know, I love watching sports at home. So I thought it was a good compromise going home, throwing some steaks on the grill, pouring a glass of wine, hanging out with the kids and watching it, talking to you fellers, Don. And so like that was fun. I was definitely glad I made that call because after those two very long days, and especially if you're media and you're in the arena hours before and you're talking to people and you're working, or if you're a fan and you're sitting there nonstop all day, that's tough. So it was definitely, I loved watching the finals at home. But yeah, it is definitely a long tournament.
Yeah, I'm sure though. You know, though, in Fort Worth was the same thing, and I didn't feel like it was as bad as this. I don't know. What was the differences? I don't know. I thought Fort Worth was awesome.
Fort Worth had no fans, and I didn't go to Fort Worth because
that's not true.
During COVID?
Fort Worth was.
Oh, they had masks.
No, I don't know. I don't know if they. I don't think they had masks. It was 2021. It was like April of 2021. There was a ton of people there. It was awesome. But I didn't feel like it was as laborious as this one. I didn't feel like it was as drawn out. I don't know.
I know you also did a show with Felters at 2 in the morning on Saturday. But I will address my Penn State tweet because I'm a Penn State guy.
The Penn State boards are ripping me right now.
I'm a Penn State guy through and through. People get pissed at me because I'm a Penn State homer. And I called the Penn State fans out, the annoying ones. And I simply said, hand up. I can see why people hate Penn State fans. I don't hate Penn State fans. I hate the scumbags that are telling Jordan Burroughs, go home, your career is over, all that crap. But I said, I don't hate
the Penn State fans either.
No. And all I was saying is obviously. I was saying I see why people don't like Penn State fans because there's a lot of like and it happens in any successful dynasty when it's built. You get a lot of fair weather fans, you get a lot of bandwagon fans, and they're not as
okay.
As, what?
So there's the Penn State fans are like shredding me right now. And again, like every time you got to qualify it with it's not the entire fan base, right? The entire fan base of Penn State is not bad people. The majority of them are great, great, awesome dudes. So I qualify that. But the people are wrong on this topic on like so many different levels. One, some people say, well, Penn State's newer to wrestling. No, they're not. These people have been fans forever and ever. The dynasty, their success in the last 15 years is new, and it has brought out some new fans, but they've been top 10 in history, Penn State. They've had large – I've gone to duels at Rec Hall in 1990, sold out. I mean, stop. It's nonsense to say Penn State is new. So it's not that they're uneducated. Now, is there a segment of newish guys, newish fans? Yeah, sure. But that doesn't mean that, oh, they're not that educated, so they're new fans, so they don't know how. You don't know. If I went to a badminton game, right now, I've never watched badminton in my life. If I went to a badminton game just because, like, I don't know, I'm a Clemson fan and Clemson's awesome in badminton, my first reaction isn't to go there and say, hey, your mother sucks.
Like, well, I think there's a difference between.
You don't have to be knowledgeable to have some decency, okay? And so that's the second one. The third one is, well, it happens in other sports. What do you think Tom Brady gets yelled? What do you think UFC fans do? So it's a juvenile argument. What if Tommy comes home and he punches his sister, and Tommy says, well, my friend Timmy at school said it was okay. You say, well, Timmy said it was okay, then we're good. No. Just because somebody says something audacious at an MMA fight does not mean that you should be audacious over here. This is dumb. Another thing is they're saying, oh, the only reason I'm coming out of the woodwork now and criticizing Penn State crowd is because I'm close with Nebraska and Manning and Jordan Burroughs. No, that's not. That has nothing to do with it. I mean, I criticized. First of all, I've been called Penn State Willie for a decade and a half.
Well, I call you all Husker now, Willie. But listen, I do think I was explaining this morning to somebody, like, listen, my relationship with Burroughs and his family, yes, I'm going to notice it more when I know his wife, I know his kids, I know Beacon's hearing his dad getting booed. And it's like, yes, you're going to notice these things more. It doesn't make it any more right or wrong, but listen, of course people are going to speak up at times when they have relationships or things that motivate, of course.
It has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with that. And everything, and probably the most important aspect of this is that Penn State fans are saying, one, Burroughs brought this on himself, which is not true. Two, the one thing they keep saying is that, oh, Willie, you're making this out because one guy shouted something? No. First of all, it wasn't one guy. Second of all, you go to a match at Rec Hall or Carver Hawkeye, you hear audacious things. I mean, stuff that's uncomfortable. I've heard several times people talking about somebody's mother, like razzing on the mother to the mother.
Well,
what's your problem?
I've never heard
anybody. I'm not saying it's a majority, but be better.
I don't know about any of that. That's fine. I'm not saying you're lying or you're wrong. I'm just saying I don't know anything about that. What got me was Messenbrink got the loudest pop of the night, and Burroughs started getting booed right away. He did a sock pull like in the first period, and he started getting booed. And I'm like, guys, come on.
Yeah, we're talking about sock pulls.
Another
thing too is, everybody's saying, I'm reluctant to make this about the Penn State crowd and the Jordan Burroughs. I'm reluctant to even say that. That's because that's not the reason. That's just the latest. But they're acting like Mitch Messenbrink did nothing wrong. Mitch Messenbrink was nipping at freaking Burroughs the entire match.
Yeah, and that's how, right? Messenbrink, he just did the same thing to Carr. Like, that's how Messenbrink wrestles, and I think it brings a lot of excitement to the sport. But at the same time, you're going to have people who don't like it, who don't like that.
Well, you know, if you nip at somebody, wrestle after the whistle, be a little extra physical, push on the edge, and then the big dog pushes back. Stop whining.
And by the way,
whining about it.
There were a lot of Penn State fans DMing me, like, listen, I agree. Like, we should be showing Burroughs more respect. Like, so I do think it's a group of people. I don't think it's obviously all Penn State fans, but they're.
It's not. I mean, obviously, it's not all Penn State fans. And here's another thing about the respect thing. No, listen, you don't have to show Jordan Burroughs respect. You don't have to. This is what I don't get about the Penn State fans right now that depend, and again, qualified. The Penn State fans that are calling me the devil right now. I'm not saying that you have to throw rose petals at Jordan Burroughs' feet. I'm not saying you have to cheer for the guy. I'm not saying you have to cheer for Spencer Lee. I'm not saying you have to. I'm not saying you can't boo. Frankly, I'm not saying you have to do anything. I'm not the arbiter. I'm not. I don't make the rules. I don't control the population in the crowd. But if you're allowed to do that, I'm allowed, when you go overboard, to say that's bullshit. So you're allowed to have an opinion and act a certain way, and I'm not?
Well, then, and that's why I was talking to somebody else. I'm like, I don't. This is the last comment. We'll get on to going through the weights. But I don't care if you boo people. I thought it was excessive, and that's when I sent the tweet out. Listen, of course, that arena – and it's a topic I want to talk about later. That arena was 80% Penn State. You walk through the concourse, and it was Penn State apparel more than every other person. Two out of every three people, which is only 66%, so probably even more. But so, of course, Penn State guys, and they just saw Mess and Brink in the NCAA Finals after a crazy year. I understand the excitement and booing against the other guy. You used the word overboard. That's a good way to put it. I thought it was just a bit excessive, but listen, it's not everybody, of course. And it sucks when, you know, obviously if you're a Penn State fan and you take offense to it, I get it. It's like, you don't want to be lumped in with somebody who's a jerk. And I'm sure there's just some people who disagree with us and think, you know, the quote, you either die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Like, that's, you know, kind of how they viewed Burroughs. So it is what it is. Let's get to the weights.
Yeah, hey, listen. Yeah, fans are allowed to do whatever they want. They're allowed to do whatever they want. And I'm allowed to have an opinion on what they do. So let's get to the weights. 57 kilograms. Zane Richards, your top seed. Nobody sitting because Vito scratched. Lilladol beat DeShazer. Spencer beats Megaludis 8-0. Zane Richards beats Lilladol. Down below, Soriano beat Marcus Blaze, then lost to Fix 5-1. And at that point, I'm like, man, Fix looks really good. Jax Forrest, the high schooler, over Liam Cronin. And then Thomas Gilman 5-4 over Forrest. And I thought in that match, it's really interesting how brackets play out, right, Justin? Mm-hmm. Because Dayton Fix beat Soriano pretty impressively. I think it was two takedowns to zero, and Thomas Gilman looked a little lethargic. So you're thinking maybe pre-tournament, I'll take Gilman all the way out. Dayton beating Soriano, now maybe you're thinking Dayton, and it was all Gilman.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure we both had Gilman and Lee in the finals. You know, I went Gilman. I was going back and forth with it. Spencer, you know, I've said on previous shows, he looks as healthy as he ever has, or in a long, long time, and he looks as least impacted by the weight cut as anybody in the field. And, you know, we split. You said Spencer, I said Gilman, and sure enough, they ended up in the finals. And it was a weird road because I thought Soriano – I mean, it's funny because, like, a guy like Nico Megaludis goes 0-2. You don't really see that coming. You know, even if you look at the bracket holistically. And so some of these matches, like, I thought Gilman winning only 5-4 over Jax Forrest, but then beating Fix 6-0, I'm like, wow. Yeah. You know, and the 6-0 match was – the 6-0 match, and this maybe plays into Wade a little bit, like 6-0 over Dayton Fix was in the semis, which was at 6:30 at night. So right. he had all day
right.
to kind of get his size going.
That's another thing we didn't talk about, format. Those guys got out late. Like Aaron Brooks was losing weight at 1 in the morning.
He didn't get done cutting weight till 2 in the morning.
Right. So, in turn, some of those bigger guys or some of the bigger weight cutters in the night session, like Thomas Gilman, he's probably feeling pretty good. Now, in the finals, I thought Thomas wrestled really well. I thought Thomas wrestled about as competitive a match as you can get. I mean, he wrestled pretty perfect except for two occasions when he got turned.
Yeah, he looked great. He looked great all day. After I saw him Friday, and Spencer had that match with Zane Richards where, so at the semis, you saw Spencer win 13-6 over Zane Richards, and Gilman shut down Fix 6-0. I was still feeling good. Like, this way can go either way. Like, Gilman doesn't let up a point against Fix.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I know. I thought that Spencer let off the gas. I know a lot of people were like, oh, Zane had some moments against Spencer, and he did. And Spencer had, frankly, some counters that – Zane had some opportunities they let go, actually. And so maybe thought, you know, maybe people thought Spencer a little vulnerable, but I thought Spencer let off the gas a little bit.
Could be.
But – my impression of the finals was Gilman almost had to be perfect. And when he was, he wrestled a large portion of those two matches perfect. And where he did slip, it was big slip ups, like 2 and 2s, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought, listen, I'm confident moving forward. Spencer's going to qualify the weight. I think he looks incredible. I also, two quick things. I think get rid of wrestlebacks at the Olympic trials. I don't think they're needed. I like your suggestion of just have the losers of the semifinals wrestle. But okay. I will say Jax Forrest, Marcus Blaze wrestling back for third was pretty cool. I mean, you had Blaze beat Lilidahl, and then Blaze and Jax Forrest wrestle for true third.
There's some pros and cons. I mean, one part of – I said at the top of the show, I'm not sure what they could do different, but I did put in a text chat, text thread, why have wrestlebacks? Why have wrestlebacks? And for so many reasons, like, I understand that most tournaments have wrestlebacks and they're important and there's valor in coming back, but there's two things about the wrestlebacks at the Olympic trials, or three things really, that make it, maybe not, you shouldn't have them maybe, because number one, they add a match count to a tournament that's massively running too long.
Yep.
Right? Number one. Number two, the amount of forfeits that they are, so who really cares? Number three, the number of wrestlers that are not going to wrestle that weight anytime soon again is astronomical, right? And so there was a couple occasions where, like, I wanted to tweet out, and this is no shame on them at all. I mean, but I want to tweet, you know, like, two high schoolers wrestle for third at the Olympic trials. Amazing, right? Well, yeah, that's true, but...
Fix Soriano Megalutis. Blaze beat Megalutis, but...
They all default.
Fix and Soriano default out, yeah.
It's sort of a little – I didn't want to – I wanted to praise them, but I also didn't want to be disingenuous. They're the only ones that wrestled, right?
They
wrestled for third and fourth. They're the only ones that wrestled back.
They also have a lot more to gain by getting matches in. They're younger, seeing where you are against people. Guys like Soriano and Fix, I mean, I don't know if Fix and Soriano will ever see 57 again. You'll go 61.
That's my point.
I don't think those guys can go 57 in 2028. So it's like, you know.
I mean, even if they do, the 2024 Olympic trials aren't going to matter. I mean, right. So what you're saying is, you know, on one hand, it's like, well, if they wrestle back, they'll be used for seeding purposes going forward. They're not going to be at 57.
Yep.
They're not going to be it that way. So who cares?
Yeah. So Spencer Lee, the Olympic team member, he does have to go to the last chance Olympic qualifier in Turkey, May 9th through the 12th. And I think the top three qualify the weight, and they will have a true third match, I believe.
And I'm super confident in Spencer getting it done.
Same. I think Spencer, again, he's a true 57-kilo guy. He looks great. He beat our last two reps at the weight in the semis and the finals, Zane Richards and Gilman.
Well, you know, part of my rationale for picking Spencer pre-tournament was that everybody else had questions about health, questions about weight cutting, questions about readiness as far as some of the young bucks. The only one that didn't have questions was Spencer Lee, and
yep,
he's probably the most dangerous and high prolific scoring of all of them, and he had no questions. So
yep.
It turned out, you know, you never know what you're going to get, and we'll talk about that at 86. But that one turned out to be sort of what I thought.
Yeah, it'll be interesting now, you know, to keep in mind that the non-Olympic weight world championships are end of October, world team trials, got to assume September-ish, end of August after the Olympics. So it'll be interesting to see if some of these guys, you know.
When are non-Olympic weight worlds?
The week after U23s or U20s or whatever that, it's like the last week or second last week of October.
But they didn't announce when trials are, right?
No, they have not announced the location. I've also said if Jordan wrestles, they should be in Nebraska.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because, yeah, and of course, James maybe in the mix there too.
Well, not just about that, but if that's, that would officially likely be Jordan's last competition. So that being in Nebraska in front of a home crowd, I think that's the right move.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know.
65.
Well, 65 is the same thing. Do these guys like Gilman go out and go up to 61, throw their hat in the ring? It's late enough in the year of, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But yeah, let's go 65.
Well, that's another thing. We don't know who's done, who's coming back. I don't think Jordan's done. I'm not sure what Thomas will do. But 61 will have really good. We'll have really good guys. Maybe Vito, Dayton, maybe Thomas. We'll see. At 65, Pantelio beats Gross in round one. Bartlett 10-6 over Nation. Mendez beats McKenna 8-2. Kolodzic beat Larkin teched Kolodzic. That's one we got a lot of heat for, by the way.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yep.
Our preview show, we picked Larkin, and everybody was like, Kolodzic just teched him, you idiots. Yeah, okay. All right, second round, Nick Lee beats Pantelio 9-2. Alirez over Bartlett 6-2. Mendez beat James. James looked like he had nothing, boy. 6-3, Mendez. Larkin had a match with Yanni.
A very, very fun
Larkin
match.
Really dangerous parterre. Larkin, very dangerous parterre. In fact, I think he might have had a lead at one point. Let's see. Yanni, 3-0. So it was 4-3 at one point. Larkin got a 2-2. And then Yanni took the lead. So it's 4-3. 8-4 at the break. Larkin comes out with another 2-2, and it's tied up at 8. And then some oddities at the end where I don't know. I don't know exactly what the right call was. Some people were saying hand-to-hand. I didn't think that Larkin exposed, but some people were saying hand-to-hand. I certainly didn't think it was a four. Anyway, Yanni gets the win there in a very entertaining, maybe controversial match, and moves on to wrestle Mendez. Now, Mendez takes it over Yanni 12-7. He led 3-2 at the break. And then outscored him 9-5 in the second period. Fours in there for Mendez.
Yeah, Mendez looked incredible. Mendez was like a buzzsaw. You know, I was very right that James Green just cannot do anything at 65 kilos. The cut is just too much. And, you know, it sounds like, and you were saying this, that his comeback was not for 65 kilos. His comeback was 470. And because it's Olympics, he'd throw his hat in the ring.
Yeah.
And the other thing, and I said it in tweets, but it gets lost. I totally forgot Aliriz and Bo wrestled at Senior Nationals, and Aliriz beat him pretty soundly. If I had picked Aliriz to beat Bo, I still liked Nick Lee to make the finals. And, you know, Aliriz and Mendez are two kids that you talk about the future of this weight are going to be so fun to watch what they can do over the next cycle.
Yeah. Yep, they're sort of on the younger end of things. Alira is still with another year in college. Mendez with 2 years, and that's without a red shirt at all. And Mendez, man, I mean, he gave Zane everything he wanted. But to step back a second about James Green in 65, and so like a lot of people are like, why? Why wouldn't he just go 74? It's the same reason to me, it's just my opinion, but to me, it's the same reason why Zane went 65 and not 74. I listen, your dream is to make the Olympics. And I just don't think that either of them are beating a Kyle Dake. Okay. Where you take your shot at 65, and Zane looked fine. Zane looked great, especially later on in the tournament, especially the last match. Zane was in a nail biter with Mendez. I don't think Zane scored a point. Oh yeah, he did have a takedown. Who did he not have a takedown against?
Zane.
He had a takedown against Nick in the Zane. I don't think Zane had a takedown in the first match with. Maybe he did. Anyway, Zane was slower paced that first match, right?
Yeah.
So Zane beats Mendez 3-2. And Lee 11-9 over Alirez. And then Zane in two in the finals over Nick Lee. You know what was really interesting? I love Nick Lee. So Lee beats Alirez, right? And I'm watching that match, and Alirez throws a YOLO brick with no time left. And so they're reviewing it, and the review is taking longer than it needs to be. And so Nick Lee's watching over here at Zane Rutherford's match, and Zane wins, and Nick Lee's like, yeah, Zane.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's really cool to see, you know?
It was awesome.
So I thought that was cool. But Zane's our Olympian. I do think he's the best guy. I think he's the best guy to qualify. You know, similar situation to Spencer. So I think we'll get it done.
Yeah, a lot of people were surprised at the Mendez over Yanni result, 12-7. What was your thoughts on that match?
I don't think Yanni's 100% right. His training has been not ideal. He got a concussion not long ago. He's had to compete a little bit more often. Listen, everybody's saying, quote unquote, what's wrong with Yanni? Did he lose a step? Did he regress? No. It's been a weird cycle for him.
Yeah. What other 65 notes? Yeah. Zane will have to go and try to qualify the weight. again, May 11th. It should be on Flow Wrestling. UWW should have a feed for that. It'll be interesting to see which of these guys, again, non-Olympic weight world championships. I'd even said, does a guy like Yanni go up? You know, do they test the waters of just – somebody had texted me, like, do you think Yanni had a bad weight cut? And I said, look, I don't know, truthfully. I'm like, my gut reaction is very similar to yours. Like, I think he just had a concussion wrestling Nick Lee, like, 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, something that wasn't too far, and it definitely kept him off the mat. Maybe it was longer than that, but it definitely kept him off the mat. And, man, that definitely impacts you. So it'll be interesting to see what these guys do.
Yeah, I think Yanni will be fine. I think Yanni will be fine. Definitely. Although, you know, yeah, I mean, to me, Yanni's always going to be a contender. Like, he's always going to be there. He's always going to be. But I will say this, though. There's a lot of changes coming to the Cornell staff. Donnie Vincent obviously just left. That was announced today. That he's going to Buffalo. And I think that the clock is running on Gwiz. I don't think Gwiz really – my indications are that Gwiz won't be around too long. So I guess my point there with Yanni is if he starts transitioning to coaching, I don't know, you know, does that have an effect on his training?
Yeah, no, for sure.
And I don't know if any of that even materializes, but it's just something to bring up. 74. Facundo beat Haynes 6-0. You know, Haynes probably one of the most undersized guys in the bracket. Ladarian Lockett texts Meyer Shapiro. That's a two cadet world championships. Lockett, a cadet world titleist. Shapiro, a cadet world titleist and a junior world titleist. Jarrett Jacques beats Chenzo 6-6. And, it, you know, if you want a surprise of the tournament, you know, an overperformer of the tournament, it's certainly Jarrett Jacques who took fourth. This is a guy who never AA'd. He never AA'd. And yeah, he beat Vincenzo Joseph. He beat Tyler Berger.
The Quincy Monday win. He beat Quincy Monday 5-0. That was a very impressive win, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, say it out loud. There's a zero-time All-American in the semifinals of the Olympic trials.
Yeah.
Burrows over Facundo. Mesenbrink texts Lockett, who had texted Shapiro. Burrows over Mesenbrink in a really, you know, a chippy match. I think the chippiness and the pushing and shoving by both guys, the extracurricular stuff, sort of overshadowed some interesting wrestling and tactics. And I thought, like, Mesenbrink was his active self, really busy, really insane pace and movement. But I think that Burrows was too experienced and technical for him.
Yeah.
And, like, Mesenbrink would fire off 100 things and work to do 100 things, and then Burrows would sting him. And then Mesenbrink would come back and be a little busy bee, and Burrows would sting him. Right, so I thought that was really, interesting in the juxtaposition of the two. And obviously, I mean, Mesenbrink's a whiz, but you're dealing with a savvy veteran. And
that was the only chink in Mesenbrink's armor all weekend. He had three texts or four texts. He texted Lockett. He texted Monday, and he texted Jacques. So three tags.
Here's the thing. Hey, to me, I was talking to Jasper Lockett, Ladarian Lockett's dad, yesterday. And we were talking about this bracket, and we were talking about Ladarian's performance. And, you know, they were happy with Ladarian's performance, and they had really no expectations going in other than the fact that it would be good for his development. They were hoping it would be good for his development, and I think it ultimately was. But he's going to go to 74, the Junior Open, next week, which is a tremendous bracket. That bracket's great. but we were talking about Dakin, and we're talking about the future of 74. And Mezenbrink, Lockett, right? They're young guys. Mm-hmm. But he brought it up, and this is something I've thought about for a long time, but I've never said anything about it. He brought it up. He's like, you know, the thing about Dake is everybody talks about getting older, getting older, getting older. The way Dake wrestles, it's like he doesn't put a lot of wear and tear on his body. He's very under control. And I 100% would agree with that. It's like Dake's getting older, but I think he could last a lot longer than other guys his age.
Well, and here's the thing. I got to update Burroughs' site with his updated record because we have it on there. But he has over 230 wins in his career. Dake's at 130-something. Burroughs literally has over 100 more wins. And I bring that up to talk about. You talk about, you know, Jordan has been the guy for 13, 14 years now, and he's never taken a year off. Taylor's had injuries, had to take 2019 off. Dake's had injuries, had to take some time off. And, you know, it's crazy. Dake, if you're Dake, I don't know why you'd even think about slowing down. He does.
I know.
There's nothing that says, and two things that stuck out about this. Number one, and we're going to talk about Brooks Taylor in a minute, but Brooks beating Taylor, I think, makes Dake's one even more impressive because the Brooks Taylor match played out exactly like I thought it would. How much better did Taylor get over the past year versus how much better is Brooks getting in a sport that favors the young guy?
Yeah, and that deserves its own whole conversation.
And we're going to talk about that. But my point is, for Taylor, there's questions. Did he come out flat? Did he – whatever. My point is, you have to give credit there to Dake because no matter how hard Nolf is trained or Burroughs is trained or anybody in that weight class is trained, Nolf never got to Dake's legs once. And Nolf, arguably, the match before, in my opinion, the best match of his career. He beats Burroughs 3-0.
Well, let's talk about that. 3-0 over Burroughs. And I think the right guy won. I think and you know, I talked to the Nebraska staff and they're like, Nolf won fair and square. You know, Nolf beat him. And he did. And I thought Nolf wrestled great. But I will say that the second period, after, let me see something. When did Nolf score? Nolf scored he scored 5 seconds into the second period, right? Which made it 2-0. No, 2-1. No, it made it 3-0. Made it 3-0, right? And then, and I'm not criticizing Nolf on this because they let him do it. He ran to the edge. For 2 minutes and 50 seconds, he ran to the zone and then dropped and grounded himself. I am not coming down on Jason Nolf. He beat Burroughs fair and square. I've never seen a second period look like that in my life. Do you remember that match, the circumstance?
But here's the thing. Hats off to Nolf for playing the rules like Dake does, like Burroughs does. So that's where it's 100%. Like, I agree with you. And that's where I was impressed with Nolf for doing what he had to get the win. Because these guys that are winning are not going out there and wrestling the most fan favorite matches. Dake is not.
Listen to what I'm saying. Our guys, if somebody plays the rules, I get it. But Jordan Burroughs went on the clock in period one, right? Like, somebody has to go on the clock if it's scoreless. Jordan Burroughs went on the clock. Okay. Nolf got a takedown in 5 seconds, second period. Ran to the zone the entire second period, grounded himself. He was not warned. He was not warned. Didn't even get a caution. Didn't even get a attention. It was bizarre. And, If that happened to, say, like Kyle Dake against Sitikov, if that happened to Spencer Lee against Yaguyev at the Olympics, at that match, just take Jordan Burroughs and put Spencer Lee in that situation and put Yaguyev as Jason Nolf and put their bodies out there in place of, and that match played out, we would lose our minds. And I'm not saying that Burroughs should have won in any way, shape, or form. Nolf won. I thought it was officiated really oddly. That's my point.
I was very, very happy for Nolf. I was heartbroken for Burroughs. For Nolf to have that moment at the home crowd, I was pumped for him. It's dude, this sport is the highs and lows you can feel at the exact same time, where I'm so happy for Nolf to have that moment in Penn State, but at the same time, heartbroken for Burroughs. Like,
you know, I'm so first let me address Nolf. Jason Nolf, who's been freaking amazing for so long, but never really shows emotion, never really even cracks a smile. When he beat Burroughs, the look of contentment on his face, the look of like, I'm happy, I'm pretty proud of myself. I was elated for him. It was much deserved, and for a guy who's done as much winning and took it in stride and didn't self-congratulate, mm-hmm. you know, the smile on his face, the ones here to do it in his home building, on his campus, I was elated for it. To me, well-deserved, and
yep.
I loved it. Now, on the other hand, Burroughs, I really wasn't sad for him or, like, heartbroken. I don't know.
I wanted Jordan to win a gold medal and go out on top.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like
I know only one of them had to win, and again, I'm so happy for Nolf, but I'm heartbroken for Jordan. I know he wanted that to win another Olympic gold, go out on top. Like I don't know.
I know everybody wants to, but are you there? Are you there? And I don't know. I'm not heartbroken for the guy. The guy's an American goat. He's done more winning than anybody, almost anybody in American history. It has to be over sometime. I don't know. I'm not heartbroken for him. He's a legend.
I'm a lot closer with him. So, like, part of it is obviously just the friendship. You know, we talk on a regular basis. So, it's like part of it is his legacy in the sport. Part of it is, you know, my guys, when they win or lose, like, it's you feel it, you know?
I guess my interpretation of it is, and I freaking love Jordan. I love
of course, he's a Husker, I mean, and you're Husker Willie.
No. It has nothing to do with that. I love him as a person. He's a great dude. He's a great dude, full of all the right values. I mean, people can get on him about nitpicking this and that, and he makes little comments and jokes and stuff. The guy's heart of gold. You know, it's stupid because, like, as the biggest face of wrestling, if he doesn't say anything, if he doesn't have charisma, if he doesn't have character, people are like, oh, why, you know, he doesn't really talk too much. But if he does, then you hang on every word he said, every little joke, every little, I'm going to go after Carter's knee. Oh, he's a big bad boogeyman now. It's just stupid. But I guess for me, where I'm at with it is, I just felt like the odds were against him anyway coming in.
100%.
Like I didn't expect him to make the team. I didn't expect him to make the team at this stage in his career. And so when he loses to Nolf, I don't know. I'm just not heartbroken for him because it was long odds to begin with.
Yeah, that's
where I was.
I understand. That's more of a neutral perspective on just his legacy. And, you know, it'd be interesting. it'll be curious to see if he goes 79 kilos and gives it one last shot, or if he just says the hell with it, or what happens.
I hope he keeps competing as long as his heart desires. He's obviously in certain situations right there. He medaled, won a world title 2 years ago, right? I mean, he won a world title 2 years ago. He's one of the best in the world still. But at 74 in this bracket, which, like, taking off, they're some of the best in the world. You had Messenbrink, two-time junior world finalist, Lockett, cadet world champ, Shapiro, cadet and junior world champ, Kyle Dake, world champ, Jason Nolf. To me, Dake and Nolf, some of the best in the world. And so I wouldn't let it discourage him. I hope he continues to wrestle as long as he wants.
Yeah. So, all right, we'll see. Dave's got to go get that gold now. Let's talk 86. Let's talk. By the way, one side note, because as I look at the bracket, one of the most gutting things about being at the trials is not only do you see more emotion out of everybody, you talk about Nolf emotion, Brooks emotion, Spencer Lee. I've never seen Spencer more excited than after he beat Gilman. The juxtaposition of that, Derringer running in the back, crying in the tunnel, Mark Hall retiring, crying, walking back, Gilman sprinting out after defeat, sitting there shaking Brand's hands with tears in his eyes. The juxtaposition, because I was just talking about like Nolf and Burrows and seeing that.
You make me cry now.
Seeing the juxtaposition of the highs and lows, there is nothing like it in this sport, like the Olympic trials. Nothing.
No. No, it's tough. It's tough. You know, for at NCAAs, when somebody, you know, a fifth-year senior that's never made the podium, the highs and lows of them winning in the blood round or something, the three-time All-American that never made a final, he loses or wins in the semis. That's crushing, right? That's highs and lows. But for the Olympics, that's the pinnacle, and a lot of times it's the end of it's not the end of your college career. It's the end of you wrestling.
Yeah.
A lot of times. Right? Right? So, for some guys, it's like it a lot of the field. It's like, okay, I didn't make it in 2024. Are you going to be able to make it in 2028? I'm probably never going to be an Olympian. Never going to reach that goal.
And this weight saw more emotion in defeat than any other weight. Trent Hydeley took that loss personal as can be against Marsteller. He was slapping himself on the way back. Derringer took the loss bad to Brooks. And Mark Hall, obviously.
All right, let's go through it.
Yeah.
Let's go through it. Connor Marisola beat David McFadden 4-0. High schooler. And we all love McFadden, you know, but McFadden's been dinged up. I think he's currently hurt. So, also first round. There wasn't a whole lot of first round matches here. Carter Starocki beat Pat Downey 12-4. Downey looked okay for about 90 mm-hmm. seconds. yeah. Downey DM'd me, "Hey, winner non-Olympic weight trials." It would be interesting to see him. It's probably never going to happen, but it would really be interesting to see Patrick Downey with a good camp on the straight and narrow. It never happened, but could you imagine? He'd be pretty tough.
What's he do? Go up to? Does he go up to 92?
He would go 92. Yeah.
Yeah.
Evan Wick, Tech Fald, Max Dean. Max Dean, I think, wrestled back pretty well, though. Second round, Brooks over Marisola, 11-5. And Marisola had some flashes in that one, right? I thought Marisola competed really well. Derringer beats Mark, 5-2. That was 3-2 at the break and a takedown by Derringer in the second period. 5-2 Derringer. Heidley beats Starachi, 6-4. I think some people were surprised at that result. I was not surprised. Like, the people I was talking to was like, Trent's massive. Trent's too big. He's going to roll Starachi up. And it was a really good competitive match. 1-1 after the first period. And Trent outscored Star 5-3 in the second.
So, I thought Carter wrestled awesome that match.
I was happy with Carter's.
Carter is the 174-pound champ wrestling a 197-pound NCAA finalist who was undefeated up until the finals. Yeah. Like,
with one of the highest bonus rates.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, we got to talk about this. Carter made comments about coming back at 97. Not only just comments, but like that Kale said at NCAA's, hey, national champ next year at 197, which is pretty interesting. Now, you know, this is the Olympic show. We're talking about the Olympics, but
he said if he decides to come back, he's going to make the announcement in the next couple of weeks.
He said that. Now, do you really think it'll be at 97? Part of me thinks that maybe.
I don't think we would know until the season starts.
I just finished. Well, before he made that announcement, I made a statement. I finished Penn State's lineup and depth chart and targets for that series that I'm running. And then Carter said that, and so I got to go back and rework that. But I would think, to me, like maybe the best option, I guess Carter could go 97. But the thing that makes it weird about 97 is like he's a 4-time national champ. To me, I would go 84 and let Barr wrestle 97, and then Barr wrestle 84 the next year. That's what I would do. But I can certainly see Barr going 84 and Star going 97. Anyway. Marsteller over Wick, 6-0. In a really odd match, Marsteller built like a fire hydrant and Wick built like a giraffe. 6-0 for Marsteller. Up top, Brooks beats Ringer 8-4 in that semi. Marsteller beats Heidley 4-2. And you talked about the emotion on Heidley. You know, I love Trent Heidley. I love Chance Marsteller. To me, it was one of those matches that personally, I didn't want anybody to lose. It hurt to see anybody lose. Now, on the flip side, it's like Trent got a long career ahead of him. You know, Marsteller's been at this for a while. And Trent has a lead late. I mean, Chance gets it with like 5 seconds to go. I mean, it was really impressive by Chance, in my opinion.
It was an extremely, extremely impressive finish for Chance. And I think that was part of the issue with why Trent was so hard on himself is that he had that match won. And I think that was part of the defeat is Trent knew he had it won.
Agree. I mean, number one, you get knocked out. Number two, right there. It was over.
Yeah.
20 seconds left. Brooks over Ringer in the top side. Marsteller loses to Valencia 3-0. What was the scoring there? It was all three in the first. No, this is wrong. I don't know. Track's wrong on this. 3-0. Zahid. I don't remember that match, to be honest with you. But one thing about one thing I was watching the quad box, but for a lot of times, but when I wasn't, when I would zone in on one, I missed a couple matches. I ain't gonna lie. You don't know because you were there in person.
No, but listen, it's hard because I missed part of that match too because I was watching Brooks' match. It's very hard to watch two wrestling matches at the same time. And when Brooks and Derringer are wrestling and Zaheen and Chance are wrestling, I'm pretty sure those were the two at the same time. And
I missed a couple matches. I missed Chance and Zaheed. I missed Zayn and Mendez. I didn't see a second of that match.
Yeah, I wish Peacock archived them individually. The stream is there for 30 days, but the individual matches aren't there, I don't believe.
Yeah. They're only going to be on there for 30 days?
I believe Peacock archives for 30 days. I think. I could be wrong.
All right. We've got to get to AB and Valencia. Valencia, true to form, kind of looked good. Well, the first period, there was nothing going on. It was 1-0 on a shot clock point for Zaheed. Second period early. Brooks actually took the lead 3-1, and then Zaheed had a big four that was a legit four, and then then they challenged and he got another point. So Zaheed's up. AB gets a takedown. AB gets a step out. And then there's like 10 seconds to go. And then on a restart. And Zaheed inadvertently, not inadvertently, I don't know, gets a finger in the singlet. Caution in one. AB wins. I hate it. It's somebody's Olympic dream. It's a crucial match. And it's determined on, you could let that go. And I said it, listen, this has nothing to do. Every time I say something, it's like I have bias or I have favoritism or like, get out of here. I have some angle. It's not about that. I said this same thing last year with Chance and Burroughs. Inadvertent is inadvertent. And I don't like you determining a match with 5 seconds to go. I don't like the ref intervening. That did not prevent any score, right? And so the weird thing is that I think we have the right rep. I think Aaron Brooks is the best guy to represent us. I think Aaron Brooks is a better, more complete wrestler than Zaheed.
I was talking about this a little while ago.
But I don't like the call.
I went back, and I know I have bias. So if people think I have a Penn State bias, I want to ignore this, dismiss it, I don't care. I went back and watched it, and I thought, if this was not called and Brooks Corner challenges, I think they win the challenge and get the call. Do you agree or disagree?
I don't know.
Think that if you watch the video, his finger looks like it gets slipped in, it's released, and then it looks like there's a grab. I could see if Brooks Corner challenged, if they didn't call it, and he gets the point that way. I thought it was a good call from the ref in real time. Take the Penn State bias if you want. I don't really care. But looking at it realistically, I don't think he got as much of a gift as everybody thinks he did.
I was watching Kennedy and Adeline, right? Was it Kennedy and Adeline? I don't know. I was watching somebody, one of the girls' matches, and one girl's finger, she ties up, clubs the head. One of the girl's finger literally got stuck in her hair, and the ref stopped it. Said, watch out for that, right? No harm, no foul. So an accident can happen there, and you see other times that things happen, something gets caught, something gets pulled. Hey, watch that, right? So you can't pick and choose. And And it doesn't matter. Ultimately, it doesn't matter what I think. That was the call. That was a call. I'm allowed to not like it. I don't like that calls. I don't like that matches get determined with 5 seconds to go. I don't like it. I just don't like it.
I understand. Yeah, I can see, especially if you're one on the other side, I can see being pissed off about it.
I don't want any side. I don't want any side. To me, I mean, frankly, if I want any side, if they say, Willie, you pick the rep. You pick the rep. I mean, I would pick AB now, right? So I'm sort of thankful that he got the call. But I don't like it. I don't like that call. I don't like matches being determined like that.
All right, let's talk about this final because I'm pumped.
All right, so AB goes out, and this is what I'm talking about. I say it every time we have a senior world team trials, an Olympic team trials. What do I always say?
Well,
you have – it's hard to understand where a wrestler is at when you haven't seen him in 9 months. It's hard. How you have no earthly idea. You have no earthly idea where they're going to be at. How good are they? Especially when they get up in age. You have no earthly idea. And to me, David didn't 100% not look like himself at all. Body language, movement, physically. And AB wins 4-1 in the first. He got a takedown. Got a takedown in the first, relatively right about the middle of the period. David got a shot clock point in the second, and a takedown with a minute to go. 4-1, fairly uneventful. David, a lot of times, David, when he gets in on shots, he's able to pull them up. He wasn't able to do with that with Brooks. I'm watching it the whole time, and I'm like, kind of like, all right, when is David going to turn it up? And it just never came. Right? I don't know. Is that how you saw it?
Well,
at least in match one.
You asked me on the preview show, and I said Brooks is the pick. And you said Brooks can't be the pick, and I said Brooks is the pick. And part of what you alluded to was why. Now, I give Dake a lot of credit for wrestling 2-3 times a year and showing up and being able to put on the performance that Kyle Dake does. That is not the norm. And when you're a guy like David Taylor, what's that?
David. Dake? You said
no.
Dake.
Yeah, I'm talking about when I was talking about Dake and what he did at 74 kilos, where here the guy barely wrestles and he comes out and he dominates and he wins like he's aging backwards, like he says. So that is not the norm. And what David Taylor did is a bit more what I expected. He's 33 years old. He's not.
Right. Yes.
He's good not. Point. He's not wrestling as often. Even Dake wrestled Pan Ams. And David Taylor was scheduled to wrestle the Pan Ams. He didn't. So, and David Taylor is king of secrecy.
Well, I guess.
What?
I guess we're coming at this from the same place. When I said on the show that you never know, you don't know what you're going to get from David because you haven't seen him, right? You haven't seen him. And you're saying father time and less activity.
Well, not
you
just...
were coming from a place where you assumed a little bit of drop off. I was coming to a place from, I have to assume we're going to get the same David. I'm assuming we're getting last year's world championship
okay.
level David Taylor. And okay, I don't think so we got that.
Here's why you're wrong with that. Because some people were saying that. David Taylor beat Aaron Brooks last year, 6-0. In the second match, he beat him 5-4. Yeah. He beat him by 1 point.
Yeah.
In that last year, sure. I do not think David Taylor fell off. I think, and my premise has been, Aaron Brooks got better. He went out. He won a U23 World Gold. He won 20 of 22 matches in the NCAA season with bonus victories. He won a Hodge Trophy. He won his fourth title, and he game planned. He game planned for David Taylor with the same coaches David has for the past year. And if you lost a match by 1 point, and David, I don't think David regressed. I think David's not getting better at 33 years old, and I think Aaron Brooks closed that gap and shut him down. He knows exactly what David Taylor has. He's in that room, and they've been in that room for years together.
That's hard to argue with, but that's probably part of it. But I didn't think that was the same David Taylor as a year ago. Not even I didn't think it was even close.
It's easier to
be in the same David Taylor as a year ago.
I get it, but also, if Brooks doesn't shut him down and David gets the takedown when he was in deep, it's the David Taylor from last year. The difference, in my opinion, is Brooks shut that takedown completely down. And Brooks had said it in the post-match interview. He knew that David did not blow his lungs out the day before like Brooks did. And in that first match, when he got his lungs going, he knew David was coming hard in that second match. And he was ready for it.
I'll tell you this. David came out on the mat to shake hands in his singlet, and I said, that doesn't look like David Taylor from last year. Just look. I didn't think he was moving the same. I didn't think he looked the same. I'm not taking anything away from Aaron Brooks. I mean, sure. You said it. It was a 5-4 match last year. Brooks showed some glimpses last year. He's obviously improved. He's obviously familiarity. I am not taking anything away from Aaron Brooks, who I believe is going to do awesome at the Olympics. I'm not saying this is it's not a fluke. I'm not mitigating or reducing his accomplishment. I'm just saying I didn't think David looked himself.
And I will say this, because people are asking about expectations and what foreigners are thinking about Brooks. And I'll say this. Iranian fans started respecting David Taylor not after David pinned him in the World Cup in his home gym. It was after the World Championships. The very first time David Taylor beat Yazdani, David's social was flooded with Yazdani the greatest, Yazdani the greatest, Iranian flag. David earned their respect. And I think, you know, if I'm a foreigner, I'm kind of looking at this like Varner and Snyder in 2015, where Varner was the Olympic champ. They knew who he was. Varner comes out and beats him in 2015, makes the world team, and just starts dominating. And when, you know, the American system is very different than a lot of these other countries is how they get their teams. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, this is the first time David Taylor's lost domestically since 2017 when Jaden beat him. So these foreigners got to be looking like, man, who is this Aaron Brooks? And they haven't felt him. And I think that's a big thing. I think Brooks has an advantage here of coming out, and those guys like, you know, Snyder, Taylor, it didn't really do much for them once they felt Taylor out. But these guys always talk about how they want to feel somebody out. And I feel like Brooks has a bit of an advantage with them never having gotten that feel for him. And my hopes are high. I think Brooks is a favorite to medal. I think that's an understatement.
So do I. 100. I'm all the way in on Aaron Brooks. I'm glad he's our rep. He looked great. He looked like the guy. And you know, as far as foreigners go, it's probably a good thing they didn't. A lot of these guys haven't felt him before, but you know, Brooks won a cadet title. He was a finalist at juniors. He won a U23 title. So he's won at every level. So I mean, some of these guys are gonna already have an inkling about him.
Yeah, but it's a little bit different. I mean, these guys change their styles. It's, you know.
Oh, it is different, but I'm saying that, like, those foreigners, you combine his world history at the age levels And the fact that he just beat David Taylor 2-0, there's already some respect coming.
I will say this, too, because I was going to save this for the Adeline or Helen, because I want to just briefly touch on women's freestyle after this. NBC marketed the crap out of Burroughs in 2020, and Burroughs didn't make the team. Now they did it with David Taylor, and David Taylor didn't make the team. And Bashada was the one who brought that up to me. And it's funny because NBC has promoted Adeline, Helen, and Taylor a ton. Those were the three that they picked to market, and I get why. All three have charisma. All three tell their story very great. And now two out of the three don't make the team. It's crazy. And it's going to be interesting to see if they kind of pivot. And I had tweeted that I think the three best headlines. What's that?
The Madden jinx.
Yeah. And so
The Madden cover.
I think the three best storylines for NBC to dive into is one, Helen getting a record third Olympic team. Dake, can you finally get that Olympic gold, is one of the all-time greats. And Snyder going to his third Olympics, looking for his third medal. So it will be interesting to see. You know, I watch Peacock a lot. We watch Modern Family, Office, some other stuff on there. And WWE and NBC have promos they're doing where Cody Rhodes is doing promos about David Taylor and stuff. It's going to be interesting to see. You know, it's what they do. And thankfully, there's enough footage of Helen and Dake and Snyder, but
I think one of the biggest stories and a nice marketing angle, I think the youth movement in the women's, I mean, you got Amit and Kennedy Blades that are both sub 20.
I know, it's crazy.
And that are Olympian. That's absurd.
The women's freestyle over
you
the
had
next...
another one in the finals.
Yeah, Audrey. The women's freestyle over the next cycle is going to be crazy because, you know, women's freestyle had six women sitting out, one in each weight, and five out of the six made the team. The only one that didn't was Kennedy swept Adeline two in a row. But aside from that, like, there is such dominance right now. But as these young stars start coming up, it's going to be interesting to see, like, does Kennedy, who has traded losses with some other girls, does she set herself out and maintain that lead, especially as we separate from, you know, six weights to 10 next year? You've got Amit Ylor, who I don't know if anybody's going to beat her in the next 10 years, but you do have some weights where it's like,
I know
Audrey Jimenez is only 17, 18 years old, and Hilda Brandt, she's 30 now. She teched her twice in a row, but it's like, will we see that changing the guard next year? Does it take a cycle? Like, I mean, that this sport takes a lot out of you. So going to be interesting to watch. But, yeah. Kennedy's a dog.
Yeah,
Shout out Izzy. Shout out Izzy with his first Olympian.
The women's storyline is really great. And especially there was a couple years ago at the World Championships with 10 weights, I thought we could really make a move for a title, women's freestyle. I think maybe, but the breadth, the scope of the Japanese program is so good that we might be, now I might be saying something stupid here, but my knee-jerk reaction, I mean, we might be better. We might be more equipped to win a team title with six weights because how deep Japan is. I mean, we're going to have Sarah, who is a perennial medal contender. So even if we don't, I mean, even if we don't beat Japan head up there, it should be negligible, right? Like bronze, silver, gold, right? So there's a couple points. We can compete there. Helen has slayed a legend. Amit never loses. Kennedy can do it. I mean, I ain't saying we're going to beat Japan, but I'm saying we're equipped to do really well as a team.
Yeah, I don't know if we're there yet. I mean, Japan won six of the 10 weights last year at the World Championships. I think all but 62, the other five Olympic weights, they had champions at 50, 53, 57. So I do agree with you. Like, even if, like, their 50-kilo Sasaki, I think that's how you pronounce her name, the 50-kilo champ the last 2 years, like, even if Sarah can't beat her, she should be right there.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
we got a really nice team. Kayla's been on a million teams, you know. So she's a veteran. But, yeah, we're going to have a really nice women's team. 97, you know, this is the Kyle Snyder show. But Cullimore beats Jaden Cox. Jaden retires.
Wait. One more point. One more women's freestyle point I want to make. It is crazy that you can tell that we don't have the depth on the women's side we have on the men's yet. But you can tell it's slowly building to that when you take somebody like Tamara Mensah-Stock, who is one of the, you know, greatest when she's competing, and you replace her and you get Amit Ellore on the team. It's crazy that you can have Mensah-Stock retire and Ellore slip in as 20 years old, who could man a spot for the next 10 years. Crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, really a godsend, because it's hard to replace him.
Yeah.
A world champion, Olympic gold medalist, right?
And yeah.
You slot in, she leaves, and it's like, uh-oh, what are we going to do it that way? Like, oh, we got a child prodigy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the depth is coming. There's the participation level of women's wrestling is going through the roof, relatively speaking. And there's a lot of good coaches. There's a lot of good clubs out there now.
And you do see, like, 62 kilos was pretty deep.
And they're doing really, really good work.
Like, 62 kilos was definitely a deep weight class. So you are starting to see it.
Oh, yeah.
More and more. I mean, there was, like, you know, you had Jennifer Page in their world medalist. You had like three or four different world medalists, the college wrestler of the year. So you're slowly starting to get a glimpse of where it's going, I think.
Yeah, 100%. What do you want to talk about at 97? I mean, it was sort of a thin bracket. I thought that Isaac Trumbull wrestled really well.
So let me ask you your opinion, because we didn't talk about this off air. Jaden Cox beats Christian Carroll 1-1. Colin Moore texts Nate Jackson 16-6. I tweet out, who you got, Colin Moore or Jaden Cox? And I believe the results were overwhelmingly Colin Moore, and that's the way I leaned. And right away my guts started saying, is Colin Jaden's last match? What were you thinking heading into that match after watching both their quarters?
I think Jaden was checked out before he got here.
Okay.
I think Jaden knew he was going to retire. You know, and he didn't do a whole lot against Christian Carroll. He didn't do a whole lot against Colin Moore. Just body language. You know, there's 20 seconds left, and all he needs is a push out, and he sort of kind of conceded it. He kind of conceded it, and I was not surprised he left his shoes, because I felt like I feel like Jaden's mentally exhausted from the grind, right? Mm-hmm. He's had some weird stuff go on, and it's such a grind. I just think he was done, man. I thought, I mean, I said, I don't know if I said it on the show, but I wasn't sure he was going to show up.
You might have said that.
I even, Snyder texted me. He's like, bro, you would love to be in the rec hall right now, because there's so many who's who. And I said, well, riddle me this. Did you see Jaden Cox yet? And he's like, oh, yeah, he's here. So I wasn't sure he would show. I just don't feel like his heart's in it. It's hard to compete at the highest level when you're not all the way in, you know?
Yep.
So that was my thoughts on it. But Kyle cruises even over Trumbull, who looked great. protect Colin Moore. And then heavyweight Zilmer beats Thomas and Bradley. Bradley looked good with a 12-8 win over Hendrickson. But he gets beat by Zilmer 5-0. Zilmer also beats Gwiz, who beat Kirkley. This is – wait, let's see. I pick Spencer. I pick Zane. I pick Kyle. I pick David. I was wrong there. I pick Kyle. And I picked Kirkley. So I got two – I got 4-6. But Gwiz beating Kirkley 5-1 was – I guess it wasn't a surprise to me.
It was a surprise. It was a big surprise because you had said
not have a takedown.
You had said on the show, "Am I crazy for not being higher on Gwiz?" I think you said, and I had said he has not meddled since like 2017, 2018. So while he was a staple for so long, I think you were looking for a reason to have confidence in him, and why don't you? And this was the weight that from top to bottom, I think I got the wrong the most. Bradley, Don Bradley beat Kirk. 35-year-old Don Bradley beat the NCAA champ.
He did? Oh my God, he did. I didn't even realize that.
He beat him 2-2 on the backside for third.
He beat Kirk. He beat last year's NCAA runner-up, and he beat this year's NCAA champ. He's 35.
Yeah, and then he lost to Gwiz for true second.
Okay. That's a good win by Gwiz. I mean, Dom's so hard to move around. He's so big, but still, like, light on his feet. Good movement. Did you see when he like drove his feet, ran Hendrickson off the stage.
I quote tweeted and I said,
"Did you see that?"
I quote tweeted it and I said, "That dude just left Wyatt for dead. He threw him off the stage and turned around and walked back to the center." I'm like, "Dog."
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, another great performance by Zilmer, though.
Yep.
He wins the mini bracket. He was our rep a couple years ago, and he just didn't, you know. I felt like Zilmer was kind of like the Molinaro. I mean, to a lesser extent, because Molinaro was an Olympic year. But the other year when Zilmer made the team, I felt like people were like, "Oh, man, Zilmer's going to be a letdown. Oh, Frank made it. Frank doesn't have a good shot." Well, Frank went on and did Frank wrestle for – Frank competed really well at the Olympics. I don't know if he took fifth or seventh, but he was right there. Hilmer won a couple matches at Worlds. I mean, he is a legit dude. And, you know, he beats Don Bradley. He beats Gwiz, who beat Kirkley. And I thought that it was going to be a thing, and it really wasn't in the finals. Paris was just uber athletic. It just kind of out-athleted him a couple times.
Yeah. No, 100%. And again, this was the weight I think I got the most wrong.
7-0, 7-0. Yeah. Yeah. 7-0, 7-0. Shame on us. Neither one of us picked Paris. Who'd you pick?
Kirk.
I picked Kirk.
Yeah. We both picked Kirk.
Picked Kirk too?
Yep. Shocker. I was high on him coming into this tournament. I really was. I don't know if we gave him a little bit too much respect from the NCAA season. I'm very curious. I think he, you know, after dropping a couple now, it's going to be, all right, maybe I was a little high on Kirk. Let's let him prove himself a little bit more on the freestyle scene.
Well, I mean, he's right there. He's still in college. And
no, 100%.
Fourth to the trials, right?
I mean, really 100%. Great.
What else you got, champ? I'm ready to rock and roll now. I'm doing these depth charts and targets, but I also have the cadet trials contenders posted, the U20 open posted, all the contenders. I'll add commentary and picks there. But then I also want to dig into now is the time I really want to get a look at what the field's going to look like for Istanbul.
Yeah.
Who is Spencer going to have to go through? Who's Zane going to have to go through?
Yep. Yeah, that'll be good coming up. And then we still have to do a coach's show soon.
We do. We'll get to it. Let's get to it this week.
Yeah. And I want to try to do a couple shows. I was talking about with Brooks about coming on. I was talking with Slay and Mark Hall about doing a retirement show for Mark and kind of going over his career. And I think Slay is kind of cool to be on the episode because Slay was in his corner when Hall won a junior world championship. And now he was in his corner for the end of it. So I think it'd be kind of a cool show to do.
Yeah, they're really tight.
Yeah.
Those two.
So I'm probably going to get a nice string of interviews here together.
There's going to be a lot of coaching movement.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of coaching movement. You watch.
Yep.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see who Donnie brings in to Buffalo. There's a couple other, we still don't know who Adam Hall's bringing in. There's a vacancy at Army. There's a vacancy at George Mason. There's going to be some vacancies at Cornell. One or two. I'm going to say two. So, it'll be interesting.
I wouldn't hate the one that we think might fill the one spot.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
All right, that's today's show. Like, subscribe, comment, and give us your feedback, guys. We're out.
And the beat goes on.